In this parable, Jesus takes the pulse of our troubled human condition. It doesn't happen very often, but on occasion I'm inspired to cook an elaborate dinner for my family. After it's all plated up and we've started eating, there's a question I'm itching to ask, but I just about manage to hold off until the table's been cleared. The question is, how was it? My wife, who's the real cook, will probably answer with, "It was okay." But that's not what I was fishing for. I was hoping for her to say, "It was great." I'm wanting to hear that my cooking passes scrutiny, is acceptable, receives approval. Why? Because then I myself have received acceptance and approval. I am enough, even. It may seem a trivial example, but it highlights something that is hardwired into each and every one of us, a ceaseless striving after what Jesus here in verse 9 calls righteousness. So, any children listening, remember to give a thumbs up to whoever cooks your next dinner. It does more than you imagine. We are all approval hungry, striving after an approval that can never come from ourselves, but must come from somewhere else. Let's take some examples. Here in the city, look at how busy everyone is, or at least was until the first lockdown. If we're always occupied with being somewhere, doing something, that busyness we quickly come to equate with importance, giving us a sense that we are enough. Look at our relationships. In marriage, tensions arise when one is always seeking approval for his or her preferences, attitudes, and ways of doing things. Breakdown occurs when the other doesn't pass scrutiny, when the focus is always on what she or he is doing wrong, leaving them with a sense of not being enough. Look at our use of social media. Each week, a summary pops up on my phone telling me how much screen time I've averaged over the past 7 days. I'm always relieved if it tells me my social media time is down a certain percentage. Because apparently the trend is this. The more time we spend on social media seeing how well our friends appear to be doing, the more we come away feeling we're not nearly doing or being enough ourselves. All of us are all of the time ceaselessly striving to hear the words, "You are enough," spoken over our lives. That is, if we haven't already been broken under the burden of it. But such assurance forever remains elusive. For how do we know when we've arrived? And we're far more easily aware of the falling short than we are of the measuring up. It truly is a ceaseless striving. And this universal pursuit of righteousness, which is common to the religious and the irreligious alike, is all the more of a problem because it makes no distinction between what we do and who we are. If you're not doing enough or not doing enough well, then the verdict is you are not enough. But there's good news. Jesus wants to save us from this plight. At the very outset of Luke's gospel, Jesus' mother Mary sings of the nature of the salvation he brings. "The Lord has scattered the proud in their inmost thoughts, but has lifted up the humble." Now that's something to sing about. And the parable before us helps us to see why. We're in the temple in Jerusalem. Two men have come to pray. One is a Pharisee, one a tax collector. As a religious leader, we might imagine the Pharisee to be in his natural habitat. The tax collector, on the other hand, we might imagine is entering a totally alien environment. Both have come with the same purpose, to pray. Both have come with the same hope, namely that as God looks upon them, they will pass scrutiny and will know his approval and acceptance. Both seek the same outcome then, but in totally different ways. Let's look at each of them in turn. Firstly, the Pharisee. As he entered the temple, we're told in verse 11 that the Pharisee stood by himself and prayed. The picture Jesus is conveying to us is of one who separates and distances himself from the others who were also there to pray. And to do that, he perhaps had to move further than the others into the courts of the temple, closer to the altar. But it's doubtful he paid too much attention to what stood before him. He seems too preoccupied with himself. Verse 11, God, I thank you that I am not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. His prayer essentially amounts to, God, see what a great guy I am. He has boldly strode into the temple, believing that on the basis of all his behavior management, God will have no option but to say, you are enough, you are a righteous man. You've probably already noticed that, despite wanting to stand out as distinct from anyone else, this Pharisee is really just the same as everyone else. Or to put it the other way, you and I are very like him. By default, we all find ourselves on that same treadmill of ceaselessly striving to be enough. And if by the things we do, we try to secure the acceptance and approval of those around us, it is a small leap to imagine that by the things we do, we will win God's approval. But that's a mistake. Now, to be sure, this Pharisee does have something to commend him. When he says there in verse 11 that he is not a robber, an evildoer, or an adulterer, he is avoiding a lifestyle that God intends for him to avoid. Glance further down this chapter at verse 20. There, Jesus cites commandments that we are to keep, including, you shall not commit adultery, and you shall not steal. In the context of the law as a whole, not robbing or stealing means more than paying for your items before you leave the supermarket. It speaks of not withholding from the poor and needy among you that which is their due. Likewise, not being an adulterer means more than not sleeping with another woman. It speaks of a singular commitment to the one woman who is your wife. So on these counts, this Pharisee will have been just the kind of neighbor you'd like to be living next door to. His problem isn't the good things he is doing, but the purpose those good things are serving. Because he is relying on his good behavior to tell him he is enough, he is caught in a trap of forever needing to perform, overperform, and outperform. First, the Pharisee is needing to perform in relation to God. This Pharisee strides into the temple, confident that he has got his maths right. He is in credit when it comes down to the laws he has successfully kept. This means God owes him. Woe betide him if he got his maths wrong and found himself in debt. The one thing this man could never entertain was being a debtor to God. But this day, he rests easy. Second, the Pharisee is needing to overperform in relation to himself. The things we attempt in order to be enough never leave us feeling enough when we achieve them. We have to strive on some more. After having kept the law in verse 11, this Pharisee goes the extra mile, or the extra 100 miles, there in verse 12. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. The law strictly required him to fast once a year on the Day of Atonement. So this is quite a step up, fasting twice a week. The law required him to give a tenth of all he earned. But this he now extends to all he receives. echoing what Jesus says of the practice of Pharisees back in chapter 11, giving God a tenth of their mint, rue, and all other kinds of garden herbs. Third, the Pharisee is needing to outperform in relation to others. Verse 11 again, God, I thank you that I am not like other people, or even like this tax collector. Basing our enoughness on our performance will always find us comparing our performance with that of those around us. The further out front we consider ourselves to be, so much the better. But because what we do quickly merges with who we are, this is all but the same as considering yourself a better person. No wonder, then, that Jesus wants to save us from this plight, this pursuit of our own righteousness, which plagues both the religious and the irreligious alike. The more clearly we see what's in play here, the more monstrous and uglier it appears. This is the Pharisee. But there is something that this man seems not to see or not to give due attention to as he begins his prayer that day. It's something that we too could easily overlook as we listen to Jesus' parable today. All that is taking place here is happening before an altar. We come now, secondly, to the tax collector. As this man entered the temple, we're told, verse 13, he stood at a distance and would not even look up to heaven. The picture Jesus is conveying to us is of one who timidly approaches, who doesn't take it as his right to be there, who even knows he has no real right to be there. And his prayer? We could now begin to compare and contrast it with the Pharisee to see who makes for the better man, but by that we will have made the same mistake that the Pharisee was making. This tax collector is a totally different man. And more important for us to see, his approach to God is on a totally different basis. We see this as we quickly run through his performance. This tax collector doesn't perform in relation to God. Look at his prayer there in verse 13. Not a word on any of the good things he's been doing. No carefully curated profile intending to prove to God what a great guy he is. This tax collector doesn't overperform in relation to himself. There in verse 13, we're told he beat his breast. That is the action of someone who is full of remorse at having done wrong. Far from overperforming or even measuring up, this man is very aware of the ways he has fallen short. This tax collector doesn't outperform in relation to others. In fact, there is no comparison with or even awareness of any others. He prays, God have mercy on me, a sinner. In the Greek, he addresses himself as the sinner. In other words, he is not just another among many. He stands alone in his sin. And it is his sin alone that concerns him. What then is this man doing in the temple? Surely one who comes so empty-handed, so empty, so far from being enough, doesn't imagine that he could pass scrutiny, be accepted and approved by God. But this tax collector has seen something the Pharisee has failed to see, though it was right in front of him. Something that we too could easily miss. There before them, in the temple, was the altar. An altar which never saw any rest, upon which the blood of sacrifice upon sacrifice was continually being poured out. Even as they prayed, this would have been taking place before them. Something that would be difficult to fail to see, and even more difficult to unsee. The tax collector saw it. So he prays, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. In saying, have mercy on me, he isn't using the everyday word for mercy. Rather, he is using the language of temple sacrifice. His prayer is, God, cover, atone for, propitiate my sins. In the same way that blood was pouring down the sides of that altar, this tax collector knew he needed the blood of sacrifice to pour over and cover his life. Jump forward to Luke chapter 23. And again we see the blood of sacrifice being poured out as Jesus dies upon the cross. We read there from verse 47 that the centurion, seeing what had happened, praised God and said, surely this was a righteous man. When all the people who had gathered to witness this sight saw what took place, they beat their breasts and went away. What did the centurion see there upon the cross? A righteous man. A man authoritatively declared to be enough. None other than Jesus Christ. What was the tax collector seeking there in the temple? He's very aware that he's not enough and could never be enough in and of himself. But he knows that in the shedding of blood, the righteousness and enoughness of another can be his own. That is what he seeks. That is what he receives. Jesus died upon the cross. The righteous for the unrighteous. He who is enough dies for those who are not enough. And he graciously covers and clothes us in his enoughness. So, see how Jesus' parable ends? Verse 14, I tell you that this man, the tax collector, rather than the other, went home justified before God. Justified, righteous, enough, it's the same word. If God's acceptance and approval comes to us via our performance, then of course the tax collector will have gone home without it. But if God's acceptance and approval comes via the shedding of the blood of another on their behalf, then this tax collector can go home as he does, justified. Friends, Jesus wants to be the one who justifies us. He wants to be the one who speaks over our lives the words, you are enough. When he does, our ceaseless striving after our own righteousness, well, it ceases. Why? Because we've been given a far better and more perfect righteousness, that of Jesus Christ himself, that now covers and clothes us. What the world gives with the one hand, it quickly takes away with the other. But what God gives us in the enoughness of Jesus Christ is a covering and a clothing that will never be taken away. So we can rest easy, certain that the approval of the only one whose opinion of us truly matters is secure. It really is a scandalous thing, the more we think about it, that the tax collector, those quickly written off in Israel as being in bed with the enemy, should come out on top. What an outrageous claim. But this isn't the only time this happens. You might like to flick through Luke's gospel from the beginning and note just how often Jesus paints tax collectors in a favorable light. No wonder he quickly earned the unflattering nickname of friend of tax collectors and sinners. You might then like to read ahead into the very next chapter of Luke, because there the tax collector of this parable comes to life in the person of Zacchaeus. Here was a man at home justified. Why? Because he took Jesus with him. The crowds were telling him, "You're not enough." But Jesus is there beside him saying, "I've got you covered." And already Zacchaeus' life has radically changed. What does all this mean? It means I don't need my wife to tell me I'm a great cook. It means none of us need to make our busyness the measure of our value and worth. It means always proving yourself doesn't sit as the basis of our married relationships or any other relationship. It means we don't have to apply the airbrushes and filters when we use social media. Jesus delights to save us from this treadmill and to see us walking in the freedom that it brings. What does it take on our part? Simply to come humbly to him, as did that tax collector. To cry out to him for mercy. Nothing are his ears more attuned to, and nothing is he quicker to respond to than a prayer like that. Starting today, starting there, life could be very different. Amen.